Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 19th of January. Joining us this morning is Eureka City Schools Super Duper Intendant Fred Van Fleck, and we're going to talk earthquake damage.
Yes, and we had it. Believe it or not, it wasn't just Riodale.
Oh, now you're just being you're trying to draft behind them, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, let's see how good you can draft here. You ready for your? Why do we say it?
Doesn't matter.
We have gotten people suspiciously close this week and this entire month. I think, what, Winston, four?
Well, let's
so
see if
pressure
I can,
is on.
I was going to say, let's see if I can break this record.
And you're kind of the educated one here, so.
And I'm not saying break this record in a good way. I might break the streak.
All right. Do you want the one starting with the letter C or the one starting with the letter B?
Yes.
Fine. Crackpot.
Crackpot. All right. Well, I know what a crackpot is. I'm assuming the question is, where did it come from?
Well, to be precise, why do we say that?
I would say that a crackpot comes from a cracked pot, as in the cooking utensil, because you go to using it, it doesn't really work quite right. And so kind of like not being all there, he's kind of a crackpot. And so the crackpot is not very useful as a cooking utensil any longer.
You know, if you shut up at this point, you win.
All right.
Keep trying to explain, you're going down the wrong... Okay. Clay pots were once the most common household utensil for centuries. Since many of these were about the size and shape of the user's heads, the human skull was widely known as a pot. Though it might be thick and strong, crude earthenware was likely to crack when dropped. Housewives compared damaged vessels with heads of peculiar or eccentric neighbors. That made it natural to speak of an odd person as wearing a cracked pot on top of his shoulders. Language then took a short step, and anyone off the norm came to be known as
a crackpot. And you know why I knew that, right? I've been called a crackpot many times.
I would suspect that there was a genetic predisposition. Oh, cracks.
Yes.
Earthquake. Now, Eureka High, the main building, as it's known today, has withstood an awful lot of earthquakes, big ones, aftershocks, all kinds of stuff. Indeed. How did it fare this time?
For the most part, fairly well. The auditorium, though, did not fare so well. And so,
the superstructure or the contents?
The superstructure. And so across the district, we really only had minor damage with the exception of two things. Inside the new gymnasium, there was a sprinkler head that was too close to one of the steel structural support beams. And when it shook, it snapped the sprinkler head off and flooded the gymnasium because the sprinklers were charged.
Floor down?
Good news is floor is just being climatized. In other words, getting up to the same climate and acclimated to the humidity and temperature and so forth inside the gym. And it was all up on stickers, so no damage. Other than it brought up the moisture level of the concrete, which makes it a little bit more difficult to get it ready to put the floor
down.
You
just have to wait a little bit longer?
Yeah, yeah. So we consider ourselves very lucky on that one, indeed. And so that was the damage inside there. It's all taken care of, and we've looked at the rest of the sprinklers to make sure there's not issues like that, and that's been taken care of, obviously. Now, the auditorium, on the other hand, was a little bit different. So you may or may not recall, back in the early 2000s, there was an earthquake, and it wasn't a super significant one, but it was significant enough to twist one of the main structural beams inside the auditorium. So we did a seismic retrofit right around 07, 08, right around there. And so we were relatively certain that it was going to be fine, but unfortunately, the ceiling they put up was a plaster ceiling, which did not have any expansion and contraction joints in it. And so when it twisted, or didn't twist, when it shook in the earthquake, a bunch of the plaster ceiling fell. And so The piece that we're most concerned about was a piece that was not addressed during that time, and that is a balcony inside the auditorium. And back then, there were two issues that were noted with the balcony. Issue number one was the structural engineers determined that it did not have enough structural support to support the auditorium with a full load on it during an earthquake. So in other words, you can't have everyone sitting up there during an earthquake. And so at that point, it was controlled entrance to a maximum of 8 people on the balcony at any time. And there is
8 total, not 80%.
8 total. That's correct. And it's been that way since the early 2000s. And so basically the balcony has been closed. And so what we're waiting on now, because of that concern of the bracing, is the balcony safe? And so we're getting a structural engineer to come and do a full assessment of that to determine if it's safe or not.
You're now, not considering tearing it out, are you?
Well, we're considering going in and seismically retrofitting it so we can use it. We don't want to tear it out. That's not our desire.
To full capacity.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so the two big issues to get that to full capacity are ADA accessibility, because it's very steep and the ramps are narrow. And then the second is the seismic piece. There's an elevator right there already for the second story, and it's actually right next to it. So that piece is already taken care of, which won't be too difficult. Now, the challenge that goes with fixing that balcony is we think that we'll be able to get state dollars. That's not the challenge, which is good. So we think that we'll be able to get Sacramento to pay pretty much for the full amount. But the challenge is going to be is how long it's going to take, and then, of course, how much it's going to cost. Our initial estimate is $5 million.
For just the balcony?
For just the balcony. It's crazy.
Are you going, like, with gold-lined chairs and fabric?
Yeah, pretty close, one would think. But, nope, that's just what it costs these days. It's just unfathomable. I can't hardly say that word. I almost got it out. Expensive to do school construction right now.
Now, you're tying into the old superstructure, the original building also, so that probably adds a little bit of a challenge.
That's correct. So the two biggest challenges will be the proper tie-in and cross-bracing and supporting to handle that load during a seismic event, and then the second challenging piece is figuring out the sloping and the redoing of it in order for it to be accessible for ADA reasons.
So for the ADA, what percentage needs to be compliant?
Well, the state will say 100% compliant.
Well, think of a baseball park. They've got places for handicapped viewers.
Right.
But they're not going down and sitting behind the dugout.
Right. So I don't know the full extent of what they're going to say on a balcony at this point. So what I do know is there will have to be access to the balcony, which right now the ramps are too steep for that to happen. Whether there has to be access to the entirety of the balcony, I'm not sure. The second big challenge, though, that comes with this is we believe it'll take...
After the break.
We believe... I will comment on it after the break.
It is 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Eureka Superintendent of Schools, Fred Van Fleck, talking about some of the damage with the, I guess, the first earthquake.
That is accurate. This was all the first earthquake.
The second earthquake.
Second earthquake, we did not have any issues with at all.
At Eureka High, the balcony, okay, there'll be challenge. When you look at that facility, is there a way to have it more utilized? So that whatever the cost is, at least is a little bit more justifiable?
Here's the irony. Leading up to the earthquake, that facility was getting used more than it has been used in decades. And the reason for that is because other local venues around of a similar nature have drastically increased their cost for using the facilities, and we have not done that. And so many folks are migrating over and starting to use that facility. Here's a little known fact. I believe, you can quote me on it, but I could be wrong, so I'll say, how's that? I believe that it is the biggest venue in Humboldt County as far as capacity with a stage when you include the balcony. And so right now it's not without the balcony, but once the balcony is up there. 1,800? Somewhere in that vicinity. I couldn't tell you the exact number.
We used to use it back before we needed to have like half your staff there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was...
It might be a touch less than that.
It was bigger than the Muni.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly bigger than Rob and Sherry's place.
Mm-hmm. The Van Dusen Theater at Humboldt State is another one.
That's about 800, 850, mm-hmm. I mean, that neighborhood.
Right. And then Ferndale, they have a theater as small.
Yeah, the live theaters are not mm-hmm. of that capacity. Yeah, I guess for a permanent theater setting, you can't use, like, the Arcata Community Center.
The Eureka Theater, which doesn't have that capacity
it
either.
It doesn't have it either, no. Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, as far as an indoor.
Right,
That would be about it.
And I'll tell you what.
Other than, like, Redwood Acres, and you just have a bunch of seats all over the place, and that's not the same.
Right. And for, I don't know if folks have been in there in a long time, it's a beautiful facility. You walk in there, it's nice. It's, you know, it's not like a ragtag old facility. It looks a little rough right now with all the plaster all over the floor, but it's a nice facility.
So as you are anticipating this work, is there any prep you can do? I mean, certainly I would think you'd clean things up.
Not really. We don't really want anybody in there until the structural engineer comes in and does their full assessment, because
we're, it still looks like a happened yesterday?
Pretty much, yep. Yep, it's red tagged, meaning that we have all the entrances blocked off. Can't be in there, can't be on the stage. It's off limits. I did go in there right after the earthquake to look. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 10 being complete annihilation and 1 being basically nothing, by visual effects, it's maybe a 2 or a 3. It doesn't look that bad. Just some miscellaneous, pretty much concentrated to one corner, plaster came out of the ceiling. That's pretty much what it is. Balcony looks fine. Everything looks fine. We just don't know, though, until we get somebody in to take a look at it.
My recollection is at the stage, there's an under area also.
A pit, yep.
All that came out okay?
The pit's fine. The pit's been covered for years. I've only seen the pit open one time, I think, in the 11 years
really?
I've been in the
Not
district.
Even
yeah.
Well, is there still a theater program?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So even when they're doing, like, musicals and things like that,
they don't really do. Well, we don't have theater productions with an orchestra actually live in place. They will play music, but we don't have an actual orchestra there when they've done their.
Why not?
I don't know. Don't know. I can't answer. I can't say we've done musicals where the students sing and do all that. They've just never brought in an orchestra to be a part of that.
I remember, like, okay, granted, this was before you had graduated high school. But
Could have been before I was born.
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music was definitely before I was born.
South Pacific was done.
Before I was born.
As high school productions.
Okay.
The late 70s, smart guy. That was pretty routine, and it gave the music program a chance to participate. Another exposure.
I would encourage you to go check out one of the drama performances at Eureka High School someday when you're out and about. It's not a...
Well, let me know when it's going to happen.
Sure. It's not a lousy piece of work that they put together. They actually do a really nice job. I've been to several of their plays.
And the quality was mm-hmm. always there, but there was always music. Well, the band was always there.
Yeah, the music that they do at some of these is the actors sing. So,
a cappella?
No, they'll play music on
the... without instruments?
I know it. I know what that is. Because I have watched, what's the name
you
of
are
movie?
Arcata.
Pitch Perfect. There you go. See? There you go. You haven't seen Pitch Perfect. I have children, so I've seen it. You should watch it sometimes.
What is it?
movie
or TV
A movie
show?
About a cappella.
Oh, I've seen the real thing. I don't need to do that.
So, but back to the conversation, they just haven't tied the programs together that much. The orchestra program has not been an incredibly popular program at Eureka High School. We do have it. It starts in the middle schools. And in fact, my daughter plays the violin, but it just really hasn't taken off in a while.
Is the jazz band still?
Live and well. Yep. Okay, that's Chris Cox is the instructor of that, and they do performances.
That's the magnet in that area of school.
And also Limited Edition is popular as well, which is a...
They sing a cappella in that, too.
Mm-hmm. They do.
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've heard that.
I was just going to say, I've heard it.
So, Eureka, a little bit here, a little bit there, but none of the elementary schools or the junior highs?
Everyone fared pretty well. Very proud of our maintenance staff. We're lucky that this was a non-instructional school day. We were in, had a director of maintenance and another maintenance person in 3 o'clock that morning, already checking out the schools right after the earthquake. I was on the phone talking with our director of maintenance. Just really proud of the work that they do and how personal they take it to get in and make sure everything's safe and rolling. And so just appreciate them.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. A little bit of the earthquake damage, and we're kind of moving on beyond that. What about safety in general? Maintenance is a big deal, and obviously if maintenance hasn't been done, it shows during wind, rain, pestilence, all that kind of stuff. How would you grade the school's campuses now?
As far as physical plant and safety from natural disaster type stuff?
Or man-made.
Or man-made, okay. And so those are the two things that we really look at is natural, you know, earthquakes, wind, rain, fire potentially. I guess fires could or could not be natural.
Certainly for windship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you have some of the more concerning things on truly man-made, and that's... school shootings, safety, people wandering into campuses and doing those unthinkable things that I just don't understand why anybody would ever do. So let's talk about the natural disaster side first. Our campuses are in great shape. There's always little issues that we need to deal with. We weathered the storm, so to speak, very well. And all of our...
I'm the only one that can do the bad puns. Truly well.
Whether or not anybody likes it, right?
Yes.
All okay, right, fine. All right. So, hate to rain on your parade. I can do them too, but...
But it's not raining outside today.
Yes, but it has been a lot this week.
All right, fine.
All right, all right, all right. Anyways, back to it. We did well through it. And so, the earthquake, in fact, I consider... Other than the auditorium, which is significant, I don't want to downplay that, just really minor damage. It wasn't too bad for us, and so happy that that all went well. As far as the wind damage, we basically had none. The first wind event that we had when students were back in school that first day, I think it was January 3rd. January 3rd, Tuesday, January 3rd.
Sorry, you guys took the second off.
Yes, yep. Yep. We lost power over here at Lafayette Elementary for the better part of the day.
Yeah, Myrtletown was out.
Yeah. And then that was it. Otherwise, we held school and continued on, and we haven't lost any school days. And kind of the test that we use for that is if we lose toilets and water, then we cancel school. But if we just lose power, we generally do not cancel school.
How would the courtyard do? I mean, when I was... thinking of things that could go airborne,
mm-hmm.
mechanical parts, things like that, aren't typically thought of or restrained to the same extent as classroom materials are.
So it's interesting you ask that. And as you think about the earthquake, that's the first thing that our maintenance team goes and looks at is the courtyard, because they need to make sure their home base is squared away so they can safely get in and out of their facilities where they have equipment to do the reparations of the havoc caused in the district. It fared well. Other than, again, minor things being thrown around, we have our warehouse down there, just real minor stuff thrown around, no significant damage at all.
They didn't call you to help them out?
They actually prefer that I stay away.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know.
These stories that we keep hearing about. What about the campuses themselves? You mentioned something about people walking on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I suspect that it's not regular people walking on campus that's a concern. People looking to take advantage of situations or take advantage of people.
Right.
During these types of situations, you know, 2:30 in the morning, you're not going to have a lot of people walking on campuses anyway. Middle of the day,
mm-hmm.
say 2:30 p.m. instead of a.m. Now you get around you. Would you have been prepared for that?
I would like to think we would have been prepared, but you never know until you fully get tested. But what our earthquake emergency response procedures tell us is that and, you know, nothing like a good earthquake to get us to go back and review all our procedures to make sure that they're up to date and ready like they're supposed to be. What they say is if anybody feels any danger to the facility at all, the whole facility is supposed to be evacuated. When we have a 6.4 magnitude earthquake, we are going to evacuate all of our facilities, not allow anybody inside of our facilities until they've been inspected. And it's not always what you see that's going to be the danger. It's sometimes what you don't see. And you think about natural gas leaks, maybe a crack in one of the heat exchangers throwing out carbon monoxide. It could be all kinds of things like that that we inspected before children or staff ended up back on our campus. And so that's why when we have a shaker like that, our protocols say that you evacuate. You're not supposed to go running out of the classrooms when the shaker happens. You're supposed to get duck and cover. But as soon as you can feel like you're in a safe enough location to get out of the facility, that's what we would have done at that point.
Or after the event's over.
Right. And where that gets difficult, and I think where our system would have been challenged the most, is the reunification and getting the children reunified with their parents. And that...
Well, not with the classroom, but with the folks. Isn't that what parking lots are? Yeah. Pretty large parking lots in every facility.
Yeah, but if you think Eureka High School, 1,350 students, trying to get 1,300 students sorted out between the ones who drive, the ones who walk, the ones who parents are going to come pick them up, or even if you go to, say, Washington Elementary, 500 students on there, getting 500 parents showing up in a panic, their children are, reunification becomes a real challenge. And making sure that we get the right children in with the right parents and checking them off the list and everybody accounted for. And
if it's rainy, then you can't use the fields.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, it would be, well, that's why you drill these things, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then don't forget, we don't drill the reunification, but we do drill evacuation procedures.
I've asked this of a number of different folks. When you do the drills, either the tabletop or everybody knows in advance, not much of a practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So why not just pull it.
So
just see, you know, one campus at a time, you know, not the whole system, but one campus, and just, okay, guys, we're having an earthquake right now. Go. And just see what happens.
So it's interesting you ask that, because that is actually something that we do. We have not done that since pre-COVID, but we're getting back in and ready as we get our systems all up into place. And what we do, and we have to be selective on what we do. We don't walk up and hand a note to somebody and say there's an active shooter on the campus. That would just create mass panic.
That's,
and so that's not something
probably
that we would drill. Yeah. Now, something that we may drill is we're a police officer. We walk up, hand a note off to whomever is out on the campus and say, we're a police officer. We want you to lock down the campus right now because there's suspicious activity in the neighborhood.
Okay.
And so we want to see, when we just hand it to John Q. employee, how they respond.
So you watch Judge Yeah.
Yep. And then teach so we can do it better next time. Fire alarms. Students never know when we're going to have a fire drill. And so that's common.
No, but staff does.
Not always, because we have the unplanned fire drills too, when someone was doing something they shouldn't be in the bathroom, or they pull it or whatever. So
You know, actually, I would think that the shooting drill would be more viable now because of the top of mind awareness. The trouble would be the kids with the phones telling their parents.
It's not just that.
Instead of being campus contained.
People are so hypersensitive to the school shooter thing, because it's out there. I'm not saying they shouldn't be. That,
or a bomb threat, or, I mean, you may pick your pestilence. It doesn't matter. But I would think that you would want to drill to the heavy duty stuff.
But it's the emotional misalignment, I guess,
if you don't, then you're so much more vulnerable.
Let me give you a for instance in one of the drills that we did this year. This is a funny story that's not funny. It's funny because it happened during a drill, but it's not funny because it happened. Thank God it happened during a drill. All of our systems are computerized now, and so we have clocks and a speaker integrated together, and so we can do all calls across all of our campuses and speak inside of the classrooms. We did at Washington Elementary a lockdown, and so the principal put the code in so they could do the call all across the campus, and it didn't work. So she did it again, and it didn't work, and they couldn't figure out why it wasn't working. Well, guess where the all call for going into a lockdown was going to?
She put it in a different code?
No, we had a cross and wires, and it was going to Winship. And so Winship got both of the lockdowns, not knowing where this call is coming from, because that's our computer age now,
right,
where things are connected like that. And so it created, and we got some complaints from parents that we didn't call home and let them know that we had this, and their children were very upset and very concerned because there's a lockdown drill and they didn't know about it. And so people get upset about that sometimes, because not all people approach psychologically the impact of something like that the same.
And the same is true if it's real.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time, 8:50. Joining us this morning is Mr. Van Fleck from Eureka City Schools. So I understand you're giving your free breakfast?
Yes, every student succeeding breakfast at the Ingomar.
At the Ingomar?
Absolutely, yes.
Boy, top shelf it, baby.
Yeah, yeah. And we actually want to thank Thompson Construction, who is the builder of our gym, for donating the meal to the students. And so they actually sponsor it, so it's not a cost to the school district. And what the Every Student Succeeding Breakfast is each school site in Eureka City Schools nominates a student who has succeeded and is doing well despite the challenges. And so it's recognizing.
So like overcoming?
Yeah. And it's recognizing a different student who normally doesn't get recognized. It's not your student who's the top of the class, not your student who's an extreme athlete who's just phenomenal at athletics. It's a student who, despite the challenges that they have in their life, are doing very well, and they're likely going to make it.
Now, how are you able to determine those youngsters and still have all the privacy elements that are in place legally?
That's a fine line. It really is. Parents come to this breakfast, and the parents know what's going to be read. We ask their permission. And then we're careful, though, as far as what we put out publicly about. It becomes much more washed down as far as.
So if it's just the inside group, that's pretty easy to contain that.
Right, right.
Check your cell phones at the door.
Yeah, and we, you know, we're also careful about what we say, and you know, we talk generically about some of the challenges that they've overcome without being specific.
It's very difficult if you come from a da 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 background. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Joni, you want to come up and take your? I mean,
yeah,
it doesn't take much to connect those two dots.
Right, right. Sheriff Hansel was there. He was actually our keynote speaker. So happy that he Ooh. Takes part. We've had lots of folks across the community speak, and you know, many of the students have never been inside the Ingomar Club or their families, and so it's just a real nice opportunity for them. And there's, I mean, tears in there. It's just an amazing event. Very
that's
touching.
That's the way it's supposed to be, right?
Yes, indeed.
So one per campus?
That's correct.
Kind of an empty room, isn't it?
No, we fill the full room in there because they bring in their families, and we fill tables, and we invite dignitaries to come. And
oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's not filled with staff.
Nope. It's not.
Good deal. Well, that's fun stuff.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Absolutely. Thank
See you.
See
everybody tomorrow.